Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. I am Robbie from Cowboy Ventures, joined as always by Tim from Essence BC. And we are super excited for our podcast episode today. We have Frederick Bjork here, who is founder and CEO of Graphbase, the unified data layer company. So welcome, Frederick.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. So like always, we like to go all the way back to the beginning and hear about the founding story for Graphbase. So where did the idea come from?
Yeah, you know, so I guess going all the way back to when I was 9 years old, I became a developer, started building computer games on Commodore 64 and then eventually Amiga. But then in 97, I discovered the web. I created a yearbook for my school that was published in a CD-ROM built in HTML. Then I kind of fell in love with the web and I've just been doing web ever since. But then around 2006, when the cloud became a thing, I was kind of, you know, being in startups, I've been in startups for 20 plus years, and I always like to use services that make me as a developer more productive, and it lets me focus on shipping products instead of building, you know, commodity infrastructure or things that slow me down. So if you remember RightScale and Engine Yard back in the day, something I used, and Heroku came out eventually 2008, 2009. That just kind of struck a chord with me. And I've always been using services like that in all the companies that I've been in ever since. So I've been kind of dreaming about building something myself or something that I would use, something for developers. And most recently, I was at a company called The RealReal, a luxury marketplace for high-end consignment based in San Francisco. So I was a CTO there for many years, from almost the beginning through the IPO, and then I left in 2021 to start Graphbase. But there were three things that we did there, among many other things, but three things that stood out. So one was serverless in like 2015, 2016. Really liked the outcome, but didn't love the experience of building and deploying serverless. And then GraphQL was the second thing we adopted pretty early on, 2016. 2017, and we can go into that a bit later, but just loved how easy it became for front-end and mobile devs to build and shape front-end experiences. And then the last thing was just the lovely developer experience of us migrating to Next.js and Vercel. This was kind of at the end of my time there, 2018, 2019. And I wanted something like that for APIs. And couldn't really find it. And in particular, the GraphQL APIs, which is something that I really enjoy using. So I decided to build something like that myself. And I prototyped it, showed it to a bunch of people, and then 2 years ago, roughly, started doing it full time.
And we talked back in the day when you were just getting started, I think. Obviously, your company and your product, it looks really different than when we talked back then. And I'm looking at back in 2022, I think when you're announcing Graphbase, you're talking more of like a serverless GraphQL backend where you can just define your schema, then you have a generated GraphQL. And so it's a much more easier way to build a backend. Let's talk about the evolution here, right? What was your first intention when you're announcing that, right? What is the kind of product problem you want to solve and the product experience you want to provide to users? And how do you get from here to where you are today?
Great question. And we're constantly evolving, of course. But 3 years ago and 2 years ago, the first idea was to really create a full stack backend as a service solution, serverless with GraphQL as the kind of number one starting point. So that's what we announced in the private beta. And we also continued through the public beta that we launched earlier this year. What we learned is, you know, while people love the simplicity and the time to market for fully functional applications, you know, with a backend simply connected to your front end, we have close to 10,000 projects today. It's growing pretty fast and people like it. But what we noticed when we started going up market is that enterprises and big companies, they have data sources, microservices, databases, third-party APIs, and in the backend as a service land, it's very hard to convince them to use a new database, right? So we're essentially building a new database, a Graphbase. And while, you know, we were using DynamoDB under the hood, the interface you interacted with was GraphQL. So we were essentially reinventing the wheel. and going head to head with database companies, which was never really the intention, but that was the outcome. So what we decided earlier this year was to kind of de-emphasize the database and full text search and all that stuff, which is lovely. And I would love to build it at some point. But right now we're focused on providing a unified data layer, right? Where we, rather than compete with data sources and database companies, we partner with them to provide a very easy way to bring in your data to a unified GraphQL endpoint at the edge and make it performant via caching, provide observability, and just a really nice developer experience to constantly evolve it using branching, GitHub integration, and all that stuff, right? So now we are no longer a database provider. We are a unified data layer to your data sources.
It's such an interesting journey because we talk to so many startup founders where the initial idea ends up somewhat inspiring the next idea, but they end up kind of changing track. I want to dig in a little bit on that process of, because I imagine you potentially had investors and customers and users of the initial backend as a service platform. Like, how did you actually manage that transition? And like, what were some of the hardest parts and learnings before kind of switching to what Graphbase is focused on today?
It's a constant process of iterating and listening and looking at your usage and trying to understand, you know, is what we're doing today going to be valid a year and 3 years from now? But it's really healthy to just have this culture of, you know what, even we love this together, like internally, it might not make sense. So we have to be willing to let go and move on and look for the next thing that makes more sense and, you know, finding product market fit essentially. So yeah, I mean, healthy companies continue doing this, right? You shouldn't never get too comfortable, I would say.
Got it. And so I think I saw your announcement about your Graphbase engine to be open source. So maybe walk us through some of the motivation here, because you built the product, you have a lot of users, and it wasn't open source. So it sounds like your users actually don't mind, or there's no push to have that from the outside. Why did you decide open source now? And what you're hoping you can enable to do what from that?
It was always the intention to do it, but we haven't talked about some of the architectural changes we made. But you know, one of the guiding principles was to have a single command that you can run your whole backend with without any dependencies or YAML files or weird configuration that takes time or Docker images or whatnot. So spent a lot of time thinking about that. And we didn't want to open source anything until we knew we were onto something that's going to stick, right? So once it's open source, it's much harder to go back, so to speak. So we didn't want to upset anyone by putting things out there that people contribute to. They fork it, they become dependent on it. So that was one aspect of it. And the other one was, you know, we deployed our serverless backend to a Lambda, right? And then we started looking at, hey, do we want to deploy this in multiple regions to get kind of low latency globally? But then about 2 years ago, we decided, hey, let's look at this WebAssembly thing. And Cloudflare Workers is the current champion of edge network powered by V8 isolates that can run JavaScript and WebAssembly. So we spent a lot of time moving our architecture and getting it to work there. And now that we felt, okay, it's sane, we feel proud of it, now we can open source it. So that was also the other reason. But also some of the bigger companies that we talk to, you know, future and current customers, some of them have, you know, policies. Like, you know, we want to make sure that if you guys are no longer around or someone requires you, something happens, we could still run this ourselves. There's the trust, security aspect of it. But then the last thing is also community. You know, one of the things that we're really proud of at Graphbase is the connectors that we are constantly evolving and building. For example, you know, Postgres connector is coming out very soon. And then we have, you know, Fauna, Snowflake. There's no way we could build all of that ourselves. So we want to build a community around that.
Yeah, and you're touching on one of the reasons that we hear many companies like to open source their core software to get the community to build things like connectors. Before you open source, it sounds like there's a lot of debate around like when to open source, what state you wanted the engine to be in at that point. How did you make the decision on like when you were thinking through, okay, we're going to have an open source strategy. We are going to have some functionality that we're going to have as paid product either now or eventually. What was kind of your mindset around what to open source versus not? And what were some of the key debates that your team had when you were making that decision?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's kind of, you know, this fear that people have that someone might fork and provide you as a, you know, cloud service without you getting any money. So that's always something we talked about. But for the most part, like the number one thing we wanted to achieve was to have anyone be able to run the graph-based gateway anywhere. So that's kind of where we drew the line. And it's been a really good process, honestly, just from an engineering perspective, to kind of separate, you know, this GraphQL gateway. But the goal is for anyone to be able to run it in a Lambda or in your own edge network or in a container. And it's been a really nice kind of exercise to say, hey, this belongs there. This belongs in our internal orchestration, so to speak.
It's quite interesting to see your engine to be open source. But what do you decide to open source, actually? Like, is it just a connector to the data parts of the systems? Or do you try to open source also most of the service backend? Like, how do you decide what to actually abstract away to add to the open source and what do you actually keep closed source? And what do you find to be hard to find that balance with? Because I feel like most founders have not an easy time figuring that out. So just wondering what's your decision process right there?
I mean, generally speaking, we try not to open source things where we show kind of the secret sauce, or if we're, let's say, using one cloud provider today, if we want to switch tomorrow, that's not something we want to show you, right? Because we don't want it to be coupled to that and then potentially break what you're doing. So I think that's generally the rule of thumb. It's like, you know, if we're doing something behind the scenes with, let's say, Cloudflare or AWS, that's something we want to control. But anything that's related to kind of running a GraphQL gateway, that should be in the public repo, right? That's nothing to do with the way we deploy it or the underlying services. I think that's generally the rule of thumb.
So can you talk a bit about who typical graph-based users are? And it sounds like when you were talking earlier about making this transition to what graph-based is today, that a lot of it came from feedback from enterprise users and things that they needed. So can you talk a bit about who you're actually building for and like what that discovery process has been like?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the first ICP we had was commerce, right? Because that, or retail commerce, that's something I've been doing for a while. And I also know that a lot of them use GraphQL or they're going to use GraphQL and they care about performance, right? So we have some commerce customers in the works. Some of them are already about to launch. Logistics is also another one where it's the same kind of same problems there, you know, some kind of IoT, low latency, and they have data sources they want to unify with GraphQL. Travel, 3PL, some Web3 companies too. It's kind of all over the place. I mean, which is a good thing because it's a fundamental building block. Building an API gateway is something that most, if not every new company has at some point. You might start with a simple website with one database, but if your company grows, you generally add an API, and in fact, you have many APIs and eventually thousands, right? So it's something that's generic to most companies.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of similarities with those companies and just their real-time requirements and like workloads. Can you talk a bit about some moments where it felt like you were really connecting with the community, where maybe it was getting one early big customer or user? Like, just kind of walk us through when you're like, oh, okay, I'm really servicing the like needs for this group really well.
I mean, I feel like we have those conversations almost daily. I mean, in Discord, I love sitting there just getting DMs or threads of people building something and they want help with something and just seeing, you know, how they light up and they understand how it works or if you fix a bug. Now that it's open source, it's even more rewarding, I would say, both for the internal team as well as customers, you know, providing issues and pull requests. But the biggest thing is like, you know, educational too, because we deployed to the edge, which is like this almost like overused term today, but there is a benefit to it in some cases, right? Not all the time, but for our ICPs, you know, having low latency to your API could be really important. Like, there is a correlation between that and your revenue. So if you do things like authentication, caching, rate limiting, personalization, geolocation, you could do that in 20, 30 milliseconds globally, that opens it up to a pretty cool use case. And you get that for free with Graphbase. You don't have to worry about it. You not deploy it to a container in a single region. And then add on top of that caching, you can essentially make your data sources fast anywhere. That's the kind of thing we're trying to educate people about. And I love seeing customers connect the dots. And now we're working our way into bigger companies, and that's super exciting.
So walking through all the like releases and content you write, one thought I think we'd love to get more details is sort of in your journey of sort of building from the generic backend, which started probably more on defining your schema. I have a GraphQL, you know, serverless backend created. But then there's so many other integrations and features you can start. I saw you added local development support. There's a bunch of integrations around authentication, a bunch of integration around connecting, different even SaaS applications or databases. What are sort of like the key things that really turned your adoption probably more than others? Was there any surprises when you're like, hey, this sort of content or this sort of integrations added a lot more than expected? And also, what are bets you were taking on that didn't work out? I was just curious, like, is there any surprises, things that worked out a lot and things that you thought will work out that didn't? You know, some key lessons around that.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a little bit about some of the feature launches we did, and then also some content in general. So we did a launch week for public beta launch. That was great. I mean, just so much momentum around it. We should do more, and we will do more. I love watching, you know, the kind of Supabase launch week and Railway, like Vercel, everyone. I love being part of them, and I love having one with Graphbase. So that was really good. And then I think we started writing more in-depth engineering posts after being done with a public beta in April. We've kind of done this as a team now, where we commit to everyone writing about something that they did, you know, whether it's something we did in Rust or the full text search kind of post, or the fact that we open sourced, you know, the engine, all of those things. People are interested in the how and the why. And then I am too, right? So that's something we didn't really have that in our culture until the beginning of the summer. So that's been really, really good for awareness, but also adoption of the platform. I think the one big thing we held off on too long was probably TypeScript support or TypeScript config. We had this idea, like, let's just stay agnostic because GraphQL is agnostic. But then it's like, let's just give people what they want. So we announced TypeScript config, I think, in June, and that's been huge. A lot of our users are front-end developers or full-stack developers, and TypeScript is so popular. So let's give them that end-to-end type safety that they crave, you know? So that was good.
Yeah, we love this concept of launch week. And we actually had the CEO of Supabase on, who talked a lot about what they got out of it. Would love to learn a bit about how you all approached launch week. Like, what were some of the most successful moments of it? What did it include? What were kind of your metrics internally to say, okay, this was as successful as we wanted it to be?
Well, I mean, for sure, it's really good for the energy in the company to be planning one, right? So like at Graphbase, everyone is a lead, right? So you lead one project at a time. Mostly it's one-to-one just because we're so small and we have a lot to do. So for launch week, you say, okay, you're going to lead full text search and you're going to do this connector and you're going to do whatever. And we try to help each other to get to that launch week and make sure everything works. So there's a lot of coordination, but a lot of energy around it, right? So that's kind of one part of it. It forces you to be organized and focused. So that's really good. Our launch week was when most of us met for the first time. So that was really nice. We had an offsite in Barcelona, in Spain, and we launched the same time. Like, we were there. We also launched. It was like total chaos, but a lot of fun. And that was a really good success just for the company culture, I would say. And just seeing the momentum and the kind of Hacker News and retweets and whatnot for every single day was really nice.
And so I guess the hope for open source is people will contribute a lot more connectors. But I think early days was you prioritizing which one to build. How did you choose which one to actually start with? I saw MongoDB and then PostgreSQL. And then from that point, it seems like there's a lot of variations here and it's quite different. So I'm not sure there's like an easy choice here. So let me talk about like, how did you choose one? And is there any particular surprises even that made some of the connections even harder or some of the adoption even harder. Yeah, any war stories would be great too.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. It's a constant reprioritization. Like I changed my mind so many times about which one we should do next, but I think it's going to get harder and harder as we go. But the first one we chose was OpenAPI, which it makes sense because most of the world still uses REST and a lot of them have OpenAPI specs. And, you know, kind of graph-based becomes this bridge then where you can then unify and bring, you can convert an OpenAPI REST API to GraphQL with one line of code, essentially. And we do the introspection and generation for you. So that was kind of a no-brainer. Again, we did GraphQL. So there's this kind of concept of stitching or mesh, right? That's essentially what we're doing with connectors or federation. So if you wanted to connect another GraphQL, let's say GitHub or Contentful, you could do that. You can bring that into your GraphQL graph and then try to transform it and whatnot. So those were kind of the easy ones, right? But now we decided, okay, let's tackle databases, right? So the idea is like you can introspect databases and then bring them in just like you do with OpenAPI and GraphQL. We want to make it super easy for you to do, right? You shouldn't have to hand craft resolvers that read and write data to, let's say, 25 data sources. That's a lot of work because you have to then install SDKs. You have to learn the flavor of that, whether it's a gRPC microservice or MySQL database or Mongo. It's a lot of overhead, especially if you're a front-end or full-stack dev. You're like, okay, this is going to take me weeks or months. So what we, the connectors, is basically bring it in. We can unify it for you. All you need to know is GraphQL. But so Mongo was the third one. And it was slightly different because we went with a non-introspection approach. So there you actually kind of whitelist the ones you want. You tell us, okay, I have posts and users and whatnot, and then we do it for you. Then I can go on, like there's so many, but yeah, Postgres and MySQL are the next two. And then we try to just kind of listen and talk to enterprises and understand which databases do they have that they want to use connectors for. Right? Some people prefer to handwrite them, but when you show them the magic of just connecting it and we do it for you automatically, it's a huge time saver. And not only that, it actually create optimized queries for you. So we avoid N plus one queries. We do really like efficient joins and we select only the fields you need. And we do that across data sources. So there's quite a bit of work that we do for you.
And how do you think about using the community to build connectors versus the ones that your team will focus on? Because earlier you mentioned that that was one reason or one benefit of open sourcing the engine. But I imagine there are some connectors that either from a priority standpoint for your customers, your team wants to work on. Like, how do you kind of decide what your team will do versus what you will hopefully have the community build out?
For sure, we need to do the heavy lifting in the beginning, right? To kind of jumpstart the initiative to showcase like the power of connectors. So we're always going to be building connectors, but my hope is that someone might say, hey, you know, I'm going to contribute the BigQuery connector, or maybe they can improve the Postgres connector. I mean, it's both. It's fixing issues, improving performance, contributing new ones. But we'll continue building connectors as soon as a customer tells us this is the one we want. So we will do that for them.
So one question I have is looking through sort of like the products you have and sort of like the extensibility these have, one often question I think will come up is sort of like this breadth versus depth approach where, because I see you have key value stores now. You have searching, where you have like basically most of these different type of databases types all available now, while you're also supporting a fast experience with a lot of different kinds of data sources, like beyond just databases, right? These are like, you know, Pipedream and Contentful, right? You have like basically a pretty wide coverage of not just connections into what can be served by GraphQL and your own infrastructure to have different kind of search and storage. And so like, what is the thought process here? Is there a typical kind of application with a particular skill and need that you are surfacing, but you want to make sure you're able to surface like a large amount of audiences? Or, you know, there is some other thought process here, because it seems like if you want to provide a fast experience globally, with a wide coverage, it gets harder and harder when you have more and more pieces that's available. I don't know if that's the right way to think about it, but it seems that there's some trade-off here, basically.
Totally. And I think, you know, it goes back to the beginning of GraphBase. You know, we started with a big ambition to build a backend as a service. And some of the features we have are going to probably go away or at least make a comeback later, maybe. Well, full text search, for example, it's something that we decided to build because it's something that you typically add to a backend at some point. You know, sometimes you do aggregations, facets, or maybe just simple lookups. And the vision there is to, because when you have data sources, make it seamless to then index these data sources and provide full text search for them without creating all this glue between and, you know, having that with branching and just having it seamlessly built in for you is really powerful. But, you know, like the breadth, it's very hard to do all of this and do it well, right? So that's why we are now focused on the data layer, right? The GraphQL API and all the surrounding features of it, that is the main focus right now. And the database and full text search is going to have to take a back seat, potentially go away for a while and maybe do a comeback later. We don't know. But yeah, we're a team of 14. So we do ship a lot and we try to ship focused, but it's also, you should make some space during product market fit to try new things. And then but also be honest and like, listen, we tried it. It's not working. Let's focus on the stuff that works. So it's a balance.
I want to talk a bit about the messaging for GraphBase. And I know right now you talk about it as a unified data layer, but what were some of the iterations and also your process for figuring out how to talk about it? Like what user feedback you get, what the kind of process is? Because it's hard sometimes to get direct feedback from the market on what's resonating and what's not.
I mean, the first one was, I think, instant serverless GraphQL backends. And, you know, there's a lot in there and it's pretty pointed. It's very, I think Guillermo at Vercel was the one who gave me that idea. I asked like VCs and angels and customers and that's the one that kind of stuck. But then we've kind of just toyed with this idea, like GraphQL, maybe it's too much. Like, you know, maybe that's an implementation detail, right? So that's why the new data layer resonates with perhaps decision makers at bigger corporations who might not know what GraphQL is. But when you talk about benefits of GraphBase without mentioning GraphQL, that could be better, right? And then there's the performance aspect, which also is highly relevant to some customers. Right now, we're trying a positioning of your data globally fast. Right? See how that works. Some people really like that. Some people don't care at all. So we will continue iterating on it. Like is it an API developer platform? Yeah, but it's too generic. It's a bit boring. So we can do better. So yeah, always be iterating.
Actually, that's a good question. How do you make it fast? Do you try to build more of a caching? So it doesn't matter where you are, your data sources can stay where it is, and you are basically like a CDN and delivering it faster, or there's something else you're doing. Like there's multiple data sources. I'm helping you able to like pick the right ones. Like actually just seeing global data fast isn't so obvious. What exactly are you doing behind the scenes? Maybe you can talk to you a little bit on how do you make it fast and what are the things you're enabling people to be able to do here?
Absolutely. So I think there's multiple facets to this. So one is just simple edge caching. So that's the process of caching responses of your GraphQL API. So if, you know, I make a query from Stockholm, Sweden to something from Contentful, then that will be cached here and it's going to be fast to everyone here. But it's really, really a low lift, a really, really high benefit, right? Because now you're essentially made this data globally fast, right? Without any other thing, right? Then there's the fact that we essentially have a GraphQL gateway that's global and it's warm. It's always warm because everyone in the world talks to one kind of entry point. And then we figure out who is this customer? What schema do they have? And then we do the routing. And then there's connection pooling, right? So with the launch of database connectors, we will have built-in connection pooling running at the edge. So you can kind of reuse connections. We reduce the amount of round trips and handshake latency that you might incur if you were to connect from a serverless function, but also a function that's running at the edge. So that's something that's launching pretty soon. And that will also reduce your latency, even without caching.
I want to talk a bit about your pricing model. And I know this is usually something that companies iterate on a lot early. So I'm sure it's probably still something that's to a degree in process. But how did you think about what would make sense for your users? And what were some of the different frameworks that you used around, okay, here's where the value is coming from for users. Here's how we want to tie to that. Like, what's that process been like?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, I never expected me to think about it so much, but I did, and I constantly do. But definitely from the beginning, I knew it was going to be serverless. I wanted to do usage-based. I'm not a fan of seat-based licensing. I know people talk about value, but if I have an engineering team of 200 people, like, I don't like the idea of having, you know, a price of $20 to $30 per month per seat if they're just sitting there, you know? So you should be able to invite your whole team. There should be no cost until traffic starts to come in. I think that's how I see the world. So that's what we've done with GraphBase. So, and then the other thing, we wanted a hobby tier, right? So you should be able to join GraphBase, try it out, build a hobby or a side project. And if you have lots of traffic, or if you're a company, then you upgrade to Pro or Enterprise, right? So Pro is pretty cheap. It's $20 per month, regardless of team size. And then you start paying when you incur more costs than what comes with a Pro plan. And then we're also, you know, the core value prop of GraphBase is that it's a fully managed platform. So enterprises that are comfortable with that, they are comfortable with, you know, running at the edge. But we're now also experiencing, you know, we probably need a managed cloud option where we will run GraphBase on a sub account in your AWS, GCP, or Azure. So we're figuring that out. And then there's, of course, kind of government style, you know, deployments where you need air gap deployments. So we're also thinking about that.
Yeah, there's so much options. I think that seems like one of the challenges is your customers also have a very different needs, while your long tail users, individuals, probably has a lot of their needs too. So as you mature in your stage, how much do you feel like continuing to able to like really build your funnel is as important or more or less important than really figure out commercial value? Because when we talked to the Vercel founder back in the day, he was saying his first 3 years is all just Next.js adoption, right? There's no product, there's nothing. And he set the ground, like HashiCorp was similar, but I think their framework, right? It might be Terraform, just might be early days of whatever HashiCorp open source was, they wanted to become the standard in whatever the prospective role they be. In your space, there's no one standard. I guess backend is, there's a lot of various options with different trade-offs. So I wonder how you think about this. Is there a need for you to actually try to strive for like almost like a standard? Or you believe that the feature set is attractive on its own for what it is, but the commercial value, and can you search there? Maybe just a different mindset here. Anyway, I'm just wondering how you balance this sort of like free tier usage, inbound funnel kind of prioritization versus the commercial value. Like how much importance you put on each one of those?
I mean, I would say you always want to make sure you're relevant and attractive to developers. So the free plan and the pro plan is something we always want to have around and be investing in, because at the end of the day, it's a developer experience play. You know, a lot of our new customers and potential customers, they come to us because, you know, the good news is GraphQL is the standard, right? It's been around for a while now. It's becoming a bit boring. GraphQL is our Terraform or is our Next.js in a sense. So we didn't need to reinvent that, thankfully. But what doesn't exist is a fully managed platform to deploy GraphQL APIs with a good developer experience. I'm not going to name any other names, but that's something that I searched for and I just couldn't find it, right? So that's the standard we want to set, you know, become the best and easiest way to deploy APIs. And we're starting with GraphQL. So I think, yes, I mean, now, of course, we are now much more focused on B2B enterprise than we were when we started. There was more backend as a service, you know, mid-size or early stage. Those are the first customers we have, and we still want to make sure they're successful. But we've approached them. We talked about the fact that we now have connectors. So most people are going to be comfortable using Neon or PlanetScale for their data. And in fact, they're probably going to be happier there because they have full control. But the combination with Graphbase and those connectors, I think that's where we need to invest in. And that's going to scale up to the enterprise too.
I want to talk a bit about your fundraising journey. So you talked before about Guillermo, who's one of your angels. And I know you have Nat Friedman, and you also went through the Cloudflare Workers Launchpad program. So can you talk a bit about how you decided, like, what kind of fundraising or VC adjacent programs you wanted to spend time on, and also how you thought about, like, who you wanted involved with the company and how having really high profile angels has actually helped the company a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful I had, you know, my time in San Francisco. Of course, I lived there for 10 years, and at the startups I was at during those 10 years, I met amazing founders. And when I announced that I was going to start Graphbase, even before I announced I was going to fundraise, I was talking to a bunch of people, and it didn't take much, you know, for them, because, you know, people invest in developer experience, they invest in other founders, serverless, GraphQL, right? So it didn't take much. It was also 2021, right? So it was easier to raise money back then. And then I raised a seed round like 9 months after that, right? So right before it became harder to raise. But having a few champions in the beginning, having just one high profile founder makes such a difference, especially founders who care, right? And most of the people who backed me in the beginning, they do this because they really like it and they enjoy it. So it's not financially, I mean, great, of course, if you're successful, but that's not the primary reason. It's curiosity for them to learn and help. And it's amazing, like just emailing like Ollie at Datadog and or Spencer Kimball at Cockroach and Guillermo or Matt at Netlify, like just getting their feedback on pricing or some issue, whatever, like that's, it gives you confidence. And quite frankly, it can help you make connections to customers and introductions to other VCs, right? So getting one leads to two, two leads to four, and all of a sudden you have 30 angels in your pre-seed. And you're like, how did this happen? And everyone's been really nice and helpful. And I think that's key if you want to have fun and not be alone when you're raising.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wanted to ask, so usual last questions we have, and given your jump from being an operator from as a CTO in a non-dev tools company, right? Now you're full swing into this. You've learned all the ins and outs. Of course, lots of things to come. What is the biggest advice you will give other dev tool founders jumping into this first time like you are? Like, what are the things you learned the most that you didn't know jumping in here that they should know from day one?
I mean, we could start with the fact that I started alone, like solo founder, right? So that was never the intention. I always kind of was searching for one, but didn't really find one in time for me starting Graphbase. So I decided to do it. And there's pros and cons to that, of course. Like, you know, startups are great when everything's going up. And then when you're having a bad moment, it sucks. And it's sometimes pretty lonely because you can talk to the investors. They're usually pretty nice and supportive, but having a co-founder it can be quite nice. You know, in the past, that's the only thing I've done in my previous startups. But, you know, I would say dev tools, building for developers is hard. It's much harder than I anticipated just because trends move fast and you have to stay relevant and really be thinking hard about what you're doing and why. Compared to, you know, working in an e-commerce company, you know, you're doing one thing and you just continue scaling it. And of course, you have to evolve. But developers, you know, they, if you're slightly off, then you're going to miss big time. So I would say if you're going to start a DevTools company, pick something you're really passionate and you think you could do a really good job changing the developer tool world with. Because if you don't have the energy, it's going to be a tough journey. It takes years to break through and get popular, and we're still in it. So
awesome. Well, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much, Frederick. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.